first half, second half, it's like chalk and cheese.
That can't be my best bet, but it's up there.
Yeah, it's no stupid red card, that's for sure.
We'll give you the balls so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh.
I'm not fully keeping it together. Putting the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Rapids fans. You're listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is the evening of Wednesday, April 17th, 2019. Rabbi Mark Goodman, give me some good news here, friend.
Matt, you've never started the show without the enthusiasm and the excitement of your normal upbeatedness. I mean, we were in the midst of an 8-game losing streak last year, 9 if you count the U.S. Open Cup. And you were still saying, hello, Rapids fans, with the enthusiasm of a slightly highly over-caffeinated raccoon. You want some positivity? I mean, I can give you some positivity. You know, we opened Sandwich Dragons practice today. So that was a lot of fun. And the Sandwich Dragons went undefeated last season. So we're trying to go back for a title defense this year, man. That's exciting.
Are the new arrivals in? Are you looking at shuffling the squad a little bit more? What's the preseason tour looking like for the Sandwich Dragons?
Well, so I sent one of our best players on to the travel team, and actually he switched clubs altogether, went free agent to Arsenal Football.
You didn't get a transfer fee? Oh, come on, man.
Yeah, I don't know if you know this, Matt, but at the U10 level, you're not legally permitted to sell children.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. I retract the previous inquiry.
Yeah. No, I should have. I should have at least gotten like a bag of Skittles or something like that for him. But yeah, that's not how it works. So anyways, we lost Sam, but we just picked up a new kid who was a total surprise to me, whose name is just his first name.
No.
My wife is in the background yelling, don't say his name, don't say his name, like privacy concerns. So I won't say his name. I'll tell you later when my wife's not here. But the kid is built like a Mack truck. He's really exciting and he's got speed. He just like absolutely dusted my entire back line in a scrimmage today. So I'm like, ooh, this is good. I'm really excited. So I'm feeling like we lost a player and we picked up a player who could pick up the slack, and I think we'll still be an offensive threat. Plus my son Iggy is just gonna get in there and kick people in the shins and take the ball away from everybody, and that's how I trained him. That's how I learned him good. Like, kick him in the shins, I say.
Speaking of players getting a new environment and then finding some success, Mark, this past week the Colorado Rapids loaned Nicky Jackson not to the Colorado Springs Switchbacks of the USL, but their former affiliate, the Charlotte Independents, and then Nicky Jackson's USL debut of the season got a goal over the weekend. There were a lot of inquiries about why Jackson wasn't sent down to Colorado Springs and some of the implications, as we've seen in previous loan deals, where obviously you have a player who will be deconditioned to altitude, who will have to be reconditioned if they get loaned up, rather than a player such as Sam Rabin, who can go back and forth between the clubs on a weekly basis or even a daily basis. Nicky Jackson has to get on a plane. That plane involves possibly some transfers, with Charlotte being, you know, I guess an American hub, I think, and then DIA being mostly United, and I'm assuming that Nicky Jackson isn't getting a exclusive charter flight from the Charlotte International Airport out to DIA, and then obviously that involves two time zone shifts as well, which takes up a little bit more time, and then also Nicky Jackson would have to get used to that for a last minute call-up, but the Rapids have allowed for Jackson to get called up at any time, so Jackson could be like Caleb Calvert, where he was with the club, where he was with Charlotte for almost the entire season, or he could be like some of the other players we've seen with the Switchbacks in recent weeks, where it's kind of a weekly basis, just depending on the situation, what the Switchbacks need, and then ultimately what's happening as far as the first team lineup for what Anthony Hudson's Burgundy Boys are doing. Mark, your thoughts on this loan deal, what it means as far as statements regarding Nicky Jackson's place on the Rapids striker depth chart.
My guess is that the real meaning of it is exactly what you alluded to, which is that they don't expect to use him enough that shuttling him back and forth to Colorado Springs makes a lot of sense. Better to just park him in Charlotte and get him 10 or 15 games. I would say for a player like Nicky, who's on his second stint in Charlotte, since he played there a bunch last year, it's not a great sign for him. There aren't a lot of players who get sent down to USL 2 seasons in a row and really ever, to my mind, I mean, and I'm not an expert in all things MLS in history, but I think the overall sign there is that that's generally something that would happen to a player who isn't likely to wind up with a full MLS career. That's pretty pessimistic and anything can really happen, but I think you really want to be able to that a player who's really of high value to you is likely to stick.
I spoke to a couple people both on the Rapids end of things and on the Switchbacks end of things. In the few times that the Switchbacks and Nicky Jackson overlapped last season, Mark, it wasn't very good. Both in terms of his performance on the play in the games that he played in. I think he might have only played in one game, or at the very least one league game, if I'm not mistaken. And then there were some questions that I heard from a Switchback source regarding attitude, possibly, if I'm reading between the lines, implying that he thought having scored, possibly, I'm extrapolating and projecting significantly here, possibly here, dear listeners, that Jackson thought, oh, well, I scored in my MLS debut, you know, a minute and 22 seconds after subbing on. You know, I've been playing well, I've been training well, I've made progress over the course of the season with what Anthony Hudson wanted me from a professional standpoint. Maybe I'm too good for this, or maybe what I actually need are minutes at the MLS level. In any case, Switchbacks fans did not think very highly of Nicky Jackson or find him all that useful. I have reason to believe that the coaching staff on the Switchback side would have thought similar things as well, maybe a little bit more toned down. I'm wondering if that is the case, if that is a statement that the Switchbacks have a little bit more control or can have some pushback with Brian Crookham, implying that if they say, oh, here's a player you can have, and then possibly Steve Trischut or somebody who's the head coach of the Switchbacks, or somebody else in the organization says, you can give him to us all you want, we're not starting him. I have reason to believe with the people that I've talked to that if Andre Rolls or Steve Irwin goes down with the club and all the other goalkeepers are healthy, that guy is starting for the Switchbacks in goals. There's obviously, you know, all the homegrowns have on some level proven themselves in MLS or in USL. I look at Sam Vines, for example, you know, who got his first start of 2019 against DC United, but who played significant minutes with Charlotte. I think if he were to go down and play with the Switchbacks, unless there was an injury or something else really tactically, that Sam Vines would be starting at the left back position. And there's indications that maybe there weren't, that those feelings weren't there for Nicky Jackson as a possible starting forward. You know, Charlotte's in an absolute stacked Eastern Conference. St. Louis FC is off to a really, really good start. Mark, I know you could talk about what the Hounds are doing. You know, Ottawa, for me, looks like a pretty decent team as well. So Charlotte needs help, and Charlotte needs help with goals right now if they want to compete. So that kind of, that fits similar decisions as far as personnel we've seen between the Rapids and the Charlotte Independence in the past. Where it was, you know, hey, we have this player who absolutely needs minutes. Let's, and, you know, oh, we have, that's an absolute position that is a position of need for us. So that fits really, really well. And maybe this was doing them a favor because, you know, maybe the Charlotte Independence thought that, you know, they were snubbed a little bit or not having an immediate obvious, other MLS affiliate because, you know, right on that Atlantic coast, you've got DC United, who already has Loudoun FC, and then Atlanta United, who from their inception, have had Atlanta too. So there's no real obvious good geographic option, where there's a whole bunch of reasons that we've talked about on this podcast and that I brought in, my good last word friend, Mark Turner, who covers the Switchbacks for us, who talked about all the reasons why it makes sense why the Switchbacks and the Rapids should have some form of a technical relationship. I think maybe the one thing to look at in here is in previous years or in last year where Jackson had a role on the team and was filling stuff just because of all the issues that were happening at the striker position. Kai Kamara is a 90-minute player with this team, and he's a really, really good player. Nicky Jackson is really the backup to Kai Kamara if something happens to Kai Kamara. Whereas there's a couple of different things that Shinya Shiki can do that bringing him on as a super sub are valuable. I would say at this point that Shinyashiki right now is a better player than Nicky Jackson. I would say that his ceiling at the MLS level is also a little bit higher, and we've seen some tinkering from Hudson where Diego Rubio can go into other positions or have a different role in other formations that aren't exclusively at the underneath striker behind Kai and be effective, and that gives them a little bit more flexibility, where I think with Nicky Jackson, it's just a straight swap for Kai Kamara. And you know, as we saw on Saturday, he's able to be just as lethal in the first minute as he is in the late minutes. And until something happens to Kai Kamara, that was me knocking on wood, dear listeners. You know, I just think that Nicky Jackson is that backup, and something's going to have to happen for Kai for him to get recalled. In the meantime, he stays fit. He gets to play. Maybe he works out whatever issues that Anthony Hudson sees with him that need to get worked out for him to get on the bench and possibly unseat Shinyashiki, or find some other role with the team that is useful beyond being a squad player like he was for much of last season and why he has been for a lot of this year as well. Any other comments on that front, Mark?
Nope. I think to your point, though, he might find getting into the starting lineup for Charlotte won't be that easy. They have Joel Johnson, who had a tryout last year with the Rapids at the beginning of the season, but was ultimately sent back to Charlotte. Of course, he rejoins Enzo Martinez, formerly of the Rapids, last year. So that could be a really good opportunity for the two of them to kind of learn from each other, build off of each other, establish a relationship, although Enzo hasn't started super well. And then he's going to be, although they don't exactly play the same position, they might be fighting for the same minutes. It depends. He'll be fighting, potentially with Dominic Oduro.
Oh man, Dom Oduro.
Yeah, 33 years old. He of the spectacular multicolored mohawk. I think his Twitter handle is something like Freaky Fast 88 or something like that. So there's a lot of sauce up in Charlotte. I mean, they're not good right now. You know, Enzo plays alongside his brother Alex. And then you've got Oduro, and you've got the aforementioned Joel Johnson. So it's already a pretty solid team that isn't doing very well in USL right now. I think they're 14th in a 17-team Eastern Conference. So they need help, and they need to get back on track. And whether Nicky Jackson provides that spark is a good question.
Moving on, this week ago as a recording, this past Wednesday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, the Colorado Rapids did not play the Seattle Sounders, Mark, because there was a blizzard and there were implications of a possible second bomb cyclone, a bomb cyclone sequel, if you will, and then ultimately the game was decided to be canceled, and the press release came out earlier that day, it would have been in the morning, on the 10th, It will be moved to a Saturday in which both teams have availability. I believe off the top of my head, it is September 7th. And I assume that'll probably be your standard 7 p.m. game at Dick's Sporting Goods Park Mountain Standard Time. We've seen in the past, Mark, MLS go ahead with winter games or try and massage the schedule. I think of Snow Classico 2, for example. Was previously going to be, I want to say like a 2 or a 3 p.m. game, and it ended up being a night game because it was after the snow would have fallen, but there still would have been a lot of snow on the ground. I think of some of the rain games that you've had at FC Dallas. You know, you had the flood at RFK maybe 2 years ago, you know, where the tunnel was flooded. So they delayed the game, but then like the players had to like wade into the waters below RFK, you know, possibly with some, you know, backstroking raccoons by chance. In order to get back into their locker room that I guess went up some stairs such that the locker rooms themselves weren't flooded. Colorado's a weird state. Colorado has weird weather and can have all four seasons in a single day and can have wild shifts at all parts of the season in terms of weather conditions that you have, you know, where if you had played the game 2 days prior, it would have been fine. If you played the game the day after, it would have been okay as well. What is your take just from a safety standpoint of how the league has handled these sort of things? And just the approach that we should have as far as fan and player safety with some of these extreme weather events. Obviously, with Minnesota United opening their new stadium this past weekend, Allianz Field, there's going to be some potential cold weather games early season and late season. You know, is the league doing a good job as far as managing these sorts of situations? Should they be doing a better job? Should they do stuff differently?
My only perspective on this is as a school administrator in Colorado. And as a school administrator, the one thing you're really working for is making sure that people aren't caught in really bad weather during drive time. Like, that's the big deal. And so you're talking about a midweek game is supposed to happen at 7 o'clock. Almost all of our listeners, I would assume, have tried to get out to Dick's on a weeknight. It's not easy. It's, people are coming home from work. It's a little bit difficult, but, you know, it's even worse when the weather is, bad, and it's really, really bad when the weather is unpredictable in terms of its badness, meaning, it could be, you know, blizzardy and windy and dangerous. And also, as I recall, the I-70 was closed, for other reasons anyways.
Yeah, there was a bunch of construction. I had to get on 76 to get to the game on Saturday. So, I mean, you compound that. And, I mean, some of the issues that – I was at the U.S. Women's National Team friendly against Australia, and that traffic was an absolute mess, Mark. Yeah. You know, I get home – you know, at 5:30, I was there 15 minutes, and, you know, some of the issue was is they were charging for parking, and then so on that main road that I have, because I normally park, it would be on the west side of the stadium, like, all of the lots were taking so much time because they just had one guy who was scanning stuff, taking cash and taking credit cards. But, I mean, even then, the traffic up until that point, you know, was at least double of my commute just because it was rush hour from what I'm normally doing, you know, to get out to Dick's on a standard Saturday night. So, you know, I think it was a good decision. We'll see whether or not the Rapids still have anything to play for come September 7th. But just with all the data that we have as far as cold weather games, both in Colorado and in greater MLS, and then also midweek games, like, if nothing else, obviously I think, you know, fan and player and coach and staff safety is number one priority, and I think obviously the club and the clubs in the league involved made the right decision. But, you know, I think at somewhere on the financial standpoint, like, there's somebody up there in the business end of the Rapids thinking that, like, it's going to be way better for us to have something in September just because the weather's going to be nicer. It's not going to be a midweek game, and it's going to be prime time. Hopefully, you know, the Rockies don't have a game that same day, you know, at Coors Field.
Yep. All right. Enough of the weather and traffic on the nines from Matt and Mark.
Listeners, this past Saturday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, the Colorado Rapids were defeated by DC United, who had had two really, really bad games, having lost spectacularly on a Wayne Rooney red card to LAFC, and then got a midweek, rather lethargic draw with Montreal with Wayne Rooney suspended. And they came into Dick's Sporting Goods Park, and they got back on track. The Rapids had a fantastic opening 20 minutes, being very, very dynamic. You had Sam Vine starting in a wide role for the first time. Kofi Apare gets his second start with the Rapids, and Benny was, for the first time ever, in a more advanced role as a true number 10 up there in the midfield. Benny Fellhaber scores in the 11th minute off of a set piece. Jack Price sends the corner in, and then Tommy Smith with a really nice header down to Fellhaber, who chests it down, controls it, and then beats Bill Hamid on the near side. You had a somewhat similar play from Luciano Acosta off of a corner in the 35th minute with Wayne Rooney setting in the corner, and then you had Pines and Steve Birnbaum both redirecting headers to Acosta, who took a touchdown and a nice little dribble to create a shooting lane, and then he scores, making it 1-1. Just 3 minutes later, Chris Durkin scores off of a fantastic first touch and then pass out on the flank from Lucas Rodriguez. And then 5 minutes later, Rodriguez scores himself on, for my money, at least the goal of the week in Major League Soccer, just collecting the ball in midfield, dribbling up, going completely through the defense, and then just the deftest touch with just enough, but not a whole lot on it, right before Tim Howard goes into collide with him to roll it into just over the goal line. The Rapids come out and are much more aggressive in the second half. Kai Kamara gets on the board in the 60th minute with a thumping header left completely unmarked. Fellhaber and Nicholas Mesquita on the assist. The Rapids have a whole bunch of chances. DC United goes full Benny ball, 4 at the back, 5 at the back at times, and then ultimately DC walks away with all 3 points. Mark, what was your good thing from, I believe, a 5th loss in a row for the Pids this season and 0 wins on the year?
Yes. I think I liked that the team showed fight. The second half was a much better half than the first half, that they played, a fairly solid,
match in the second half. And I think, you know, Kai Kamara getting that late goal was pretty, you know, uplifting. And I liked that. And I also, you know, I went back and I rewatched the game the other day, and, you know, the team started out for the first 25 minutes really, really well, and particularly well organized defensively. They held their lines very well. They defended very well, and they made it very difficult for, DC to get anything going. And, the last thing I'll say about the good things is that, you know, despite the fact that they gave up three goals, Wayne Rooney didn't really factor into this game very much. He wasn't a big piece of what they were doing. We'll talk about why that doesn't really matter later, but but it's notable to say that Wayne Rooney came to altitude for his first time, and, you know, didn't make a significant mark in the game. What was your good thing, Matt?
Well, I mean, to start off, I think we have to go with Kai Kamara. You know, I think it's, at this point for the Rapids, I think it's death taxes, and if you get Kai Kamara the ball, he will do good things with it.
Yeah.
You know, I've been beating the drum, you know, really the past month and even earlier in the season about how Kamara wasn't getting a whole lot of chances, and for the first time under Anthony Hudson, the Rapids had a striker who consistently, if you got him the ball, he would try and create something. And he was doing 2v1s in Seattle, and he was trying for something spectacular. And, you know, he was starred for possession and starred for any support whatsoever. And we've seen in the last two games pretty consistently that when the Rapids have gotten him more of the ball, he's created a lot more chances. They had a bundle of chances and three goals, you know, against Orlando, and Kamara played a significant role in all three of those, not just the ones that he scored. And he was an absolute beast there, where previously, you know, Steve Birnbaum has had shouts at time for the U.S. men's national team, and I think he's widely regarded as one of the best American center backs in MLS, and Kamara got a bunch of chances on him, and he dunked on him to score the goal. So, I mean, you know, get Kai Kamara the ball, and he's going to do good things with it. There are a couple players in slightly different roles than we've seen earlier in the season that I want to give a shout-out to. Sam Vines with his first start. The wingbacks didn't really do a whole lot offensively for me in this game. They also didn't have critical mistakes that immediately led to goals. So I think the fact that it was Vines' first start of the season, and I believe he did play the full 90 minutes as I look at my notes. You know, the fact that we aren't talking about a Sam Vines gif that was absolutely horrible or indicative of a player who was out of his depth, I think is a good thing to him. Did he do it a lot offensively? No, but he also didn't let, you know, he didn't let Rodriguez, who was, you know, lined up against him at times, and then Areola, who is at right back, you know, who's been a fantastic midfielder at time for the U.S. national team, do anything. And that mirrors a lot from what we saw from Vines, in the Boca friendly last year, where, you know, he had 30 to 40 minutes, you know, up against Carlos Pavon, who had just come back from the World Cup and was a fantastic player for Boca Juniors, and Vines held his own. So, I like what Sam Vines did. You know, we saw Diego Rubio in a couple of different roles kind of floating throughout, and I thought he did a decent job given he was kind of constantly switching roles. Kai Kamara was very complimentary of him when I spoke to him post game, about what Rubio's done, you know, just being, you know, committed to the team, and I'll do whatever I have to. Obviously, he's more on the offensive side, and we've seen that both up top, and from a wing standpoint. But, you know, I think last year, if you had told me, hey, the Rapids' main underneath striker is randomly going to get pulled out to left wing, I'm like, okay, this is going to be an absolute disaster. And Rubio and Sam Vines playing together on the Rapids' left flank for a significant amount of time was not a disaster. And then, we saw Kellen Acosta in more of a defensive role. I tweeted this out, in the middle of pregame, maybe 10 minutes before, kickoff, saying that I know people have kind of been lamenting Acosta, and we've obviously been critical of him the last couple weeks, but I think just given how stacked DC's midfield was and what they were going to try and do up the middle, I just think Acosta just being sound defensively, not making any mistakes, and getting in the right moments, evolving the attack would have been good enough. You know, similar to Vines, he didn't really stand out, and in that, he didn't do anything that was really, really bad for me. Nothing spectacular, but DC was a really, really good team, and obviously Rooney was back with the squad, you know, albeit with, supposedly flu-like symptoms. He did miss training after, the game against Montreal last week, but, you know, he didn't make any mistakes. All right, Mark, where do you want to start with bad stuff?
So many things. The first is, you said your favorite goal was Lucas Rodriguez. I say my favorite goal is actually Chris Durkin's. That would have been my goal of the week, because Durkin took the ball from Lucas Rodriguez on a really great, smart run where he goes between the second and the third line, and he gets into a spot where there wasn't really adequate coverage for the Rapids, and Lucas Rodriguez puts the ball right into the path, and then Durkin just keeps going through the lines, gets beyond Sam Vines, who you mentioned before, and puts himself into a position where Tommy Smith isn't ready to make a play on him, and then just curls the ball with the outside of the foot, bending like a Quaresma shot away from Tim Howard and into the top corner of the net. Just a gorgeous goal, but it really comes out of total incompetence by the Rapids. Jack Price loses Lucas Rodriguez. Sam Vines is too high, and because he's worried about Acosta, or maybe it's somebody else on the other side. Tommy Smith is just in a bad spot, and he gets obliterated. And Tommy Smith got obliterated on the third goal that DC United played too, which is really bad. To watch Tommy Smith do some of the same boneheaded things he did at the end of last year. I know why Anthony Hudson starts him. It's because he's an excellent passer out of the back, and he's also an offensive threat up top when you put him on a set piece, but he's really a below average defender. It's no wonder that he was on the bench for Ipswich for two seasons before Colorado went out and got him. And at this point, between him and the rest of the defenders, you know, we just don't have that many healthy defenders at the center back position. And, we don't have that many good defenders at the center back position. I mean, Danny Wilson, you're going to start him over Tommy Smith? I mean, Danny Wilson's been even more catastrophic. So it's really frustrating. I went back and I looked at this game to see what was wrong. Because I'm really trying to figure out, like, can't the midfield do something more? And I think in other games, you could make a reasonable case that the midfield dropped the ball and really made the back line pay for mistakes they made. But in this game, honestly, all the mistakes were out of the back line. They were in defense. The last thing I'll say about the defense and why it's frustrating and bad is how rapid the collapse was and how ridiculous it was. Do you know how long it took for DC United to score those three goals?
I think the first one was in the 35th, and the last one might have been in stoppage time of the first half.
No, you're close. It was 34th and the 42nd. So the elapsed time was 7 minutes and 37 seconds between the first, the second, and the third goal. And I think it was interesting. I looked at the notes on Anthony Hudson's post-game comments, and he said something like, you know, I think they scored all their goals in like just under 12 minutes. And I'm like, no, dude, it was 7 minutes. It was 7.5 minutes that they did that. I mean, that's, you know, you could say a lot there, but that's a lapse. There's certainly a degree to which that's a lapse of concentration. And also, okay, they scored. Let's go and get another goal back, which is like, it's not a bad thing to say that. But when you think we're all going to go attack the goal, you're not defending. You're not in a mindset to defend. And that means that if the ball doesn't bounce the right way immediately, you're in danger of conceding two, or in Colorado's case, conceding three. So that's a lot of bad, of lack of mental focus, disappointing play by Tommy Smith. I called out, you know, I am the last guy who I'd ever thought would do this, because I'm a big Sam Vines fan, but you know, Sam Vines made a mistake there and he was too high. And I wanted to pin that one on Tommy Smith. I think most Rapids fans wanted to pin it on Tommy Smith because we're used to pinning it on him, but Sam left him exposed and put him in a bad spot. He had a really good game. He earned player of the game from C38, and I thought he deserved it mostly, but, Sam made a mistake there and he'll have to learn, but the team, the team's defense is bad and needs to get better. Matt, what's your bad thing if you can restrict it to, you know, under 35 different things?
So I'll start with something that has kind of been a thesis that I've been working on. I will raise my hand and acknowledge that at times on Twitter, in my writing, on this podcast, I have been a Jack Price and a Tommy Smith apologist. And I am going to make an effort to not be that going forward for a couple of different reasons. I'll start with Jack Price because we like him better and he's, you know, his beard's fantastic. I thought that Jack Price was going to be a decent cog in the midfield for this team. I thought that given what we've roughly heard about, you know, the total investment and the 4-year guaranteed contract and everything, that he was going to be a solid player, that he could, if he could be a TAM equivalent to what Kyle Beckerman was, you know, we'll say 2015 to 2017, not the last 2 years of Kyle Beckerman. And then I thought that was going to be a good piece. You know, he was going to be a building block. He was going to be one of the guys in the midfield. And then if you got one of the guys at center back, and then if you also dealt with something in the forward position, I think the Rapids absolutely had that in Kai Kamara, and the club's made all these comments about how the next two DPs that Smith wants to bring in, assuming he doesn't get fired this season, you know, are going to be a number 9 and number 10. And I've kind of just realized that Jack Price is really, really good in a vacuum. He's not going to make anybody else around him better or cover for a lot of their mistakes. So, you know, if he's a part in an engine, he is really, really great on his own. He's not going to make up for Kellen Acosta operating at 85% efficiency in some cases. He's not going to be able to completely account for all of the issues or, you know, defend against some of the issues that you have at the center back role in the ways that at times Kyle Beckerman was for Real Salt Lake. I would think of what Juninho and Marcelo Sarvis did all those years with the LA Galaxy, for example. They made other people around them better. They instilled some of the players around them with confidence when they weren't feeling good about themselves because they knew somebody had their back. Jack Price is going to do his job. He is going to do it extremely effectively. He's rarely going to make a critical mistake that leads to a goal where he gets the most of the blame pie. He is not going to, he's not going to put Tommy Smith or Kofi Opare at ease. He's not going to do anything that, you know, that I think of a young player, like a homegrown in their first game, for example, you know, maybe say a Tyler Adams stepping on the field for the first time, and maybe there's something in his brain somewhere that says, I absolutely don't belong here. And then Dax McCarty and Sasha Kljestan come up here and say, kid, you're great. You're going to do this. We've got your back. Jack Price might be doing that from a verbal standpoint, but from an action standpoint, he's not making up for things when Kellen Acosta is having a bad game. He's not covering for Cole Bassett in the ways that you might expect for a player, you know, who was on a TAM level acquisition. And he's absolutely not the shield that guards the center, the absolutely, you know, weak center backs for the Colorado Rapids. We'll move on to Tommy Smith. This was a conversation I had in the context of hockey with a couple of different people, and it made sense after I explained it and kind of articulated it. Mark, are you familiar with the term plus-minus in the NHL?
Of course.
Okay, so for those of you who don't know, listeners, who maybe you're not actively paying attention to the Avalanche, plus-minus is a stat that every single field or that every single skater has. It's normally not a stat you associated with goaltenders that I won't go into the details of why that. And it's effectively just the when you are on the ice, how many goals does your team score minus the number of goals that the opponent scores. And this is something that you track in real time so you can look at it for an individual game. There's obviously a lot more goals and a lot more shifting because you have line changes in the ways that you don't have for soccer. So you can track it for an individual game, a period over the course of the entire season. Hilariously, there was a couple of years ago when a defenseman for the Ottawa Senators, Erik Karlsson, who's widely regarded as one of the great skill players, had a negative plus minus, but then still ended up winning the Norris Trophy, crudely the Defender of the Year in the NHL, mostly for his offensive prowess. So he's more of an Edgar Castillo, you know, rather than say, I was going to say Walker Zimmerman, but he scores goals as well. You know, we'll say an AJ De La Garza, for example. There are obviously things that we've talked about, Mark, that Tommy Smith is really, really good at, that he does better than anybody else on the Rapids do. Things that are absolutely critical to what Anthony Hudson wants to do, from a building out of the back, from when Smith's able to make a run into the midfield when one of the D-mids drops back to cover and he's able to overload something and they're able to pass through teams and get into a good position in the final third relatively quickly. You know, 3-4 passes with Smith starting that and then maybe having one more, and that unlocks the defense. And that's really, really good. That's fantastic. And obviously he's able to score goals. You know, he has a goal of the season. He had a bunch on set pieces last year. Is that marginal utility of him being 20% better passing out of the back, the 3-4 times that he gets up, maybe the Rapids are able to create a chance, maybe somebody flubs it and it ends up going out for a throw-in for the other team, is that more valuable than him being borderline a individually capable of losing the game in a 7-minute stretch defensive liability standpoint? And I think we're at this point where what he does and what he's not able to do defensively, 1v1 marking, closing down players, you know, being slow to react, being more reactionary rather than anticipating plays, and teams knowing that weakness that the Rapids have at center back, he's, you know, only slightly better than what Declan Wynn and what Danny Wilson are, who I don't think, you know, should be seeing the field with any regularity through the rest of the season. Is he better than Axel Schuberg on that? I would say no. I would say that Axel has had a couple of critical mistakes that we haven't seen from him last year that are, that give me cause for pause as far as him playing. And, you know, but Axel's proven that he can be a good defender in MLS. Court Ford can prove that he can be a good defender in MLS. I'm at the point, Mark, where once everybody's actually healthy, I'm not totally unsure that the starting center backs for the Colorado Rapids should be Sam Rabin, just because we haven't seen him, and Courtney Ford, and then the first one off the bench, mostly to lock things down in the air, should be Axel Schuberg. And I think that is a tremendous detriment to all of these players that Hudson brought in that were his guys. You know, Tommy Smith and Declan Wynn were, you know, New Zealand national team players. If anybody knew them as well and could make them be successes in MLS, it would be Anthony Hudson, and they failed spectacularly. I think some of that can be heaped on the players, some of that can be heaped on Hudson, and I think ultimately how we evaluate and how we try and criticize or critique some of these players is a function of how much money they're making. And the fact is, if Tommy Smith was making Johan Blomberg, excuse me, level money, I don't think we'd be talking about him in the same way. We're at this point where Danny Wilson's a bust, and out sort of a couple of goals that got the Rapids a couple of results last year, Tommy Smith has been a spectacular disappointment. And he's only on a 2-year contract with a team option, and I'm not sure that he should come back given that he'll be on an international roster spot this year.
Yep, I agree completely with everything you said, especially about the money. Declan Wynn is a similar case. I kind of wonder, you know, this is an esoteric point and we'll never really know, but like one of those things that's really unfair on some level about soccer is that if the players don't play very well mid-season, it's going to be the coach that gets fired, because you can't really fire the players mid-season. You can sell them, you can cut them, but you're going to eat the money. And it's going to hurt your salary cap, where
you could take a free transfer to like Lincoln Town.
Yeah, but you're not going to get anything for them. I don't know. It's a, you know, I don't think there's too many Rapids fans who listen to our podcast who, if Anthony Hudson gets fired, are going to cry, and feel bad about it. But I'll stand up and say, you know, hypothetically speaking, let's say that the mistakes of the back line have been the main problem of the Rapids. And it hasn't been tactical and formational, but the coach is going to take the punishment if that winds up working out poorly for him. So it's a bummer. But that being said, I don't think over 2 seasons we've seen Anthony Hudson show clear signs of success either. So
let's move on to big thing, Mark. Where do you want to start? Is there anything we haven't addressed?
Yeah, I mean, there are. So, you know, I don't want to spoil my whole article for the post, which I dropped. I submitted today. It hasn't come out yet. Hopefully it'll come out tomorrow. But basically one of the things that I looked at was the question. Nicholas Mosqueda in the post game asked a question, something along the lines of, we just need to score our goals, because if we score our goals, we'll be okay, which I thought was really odd. When you lose 3-2, the problem's probably not goal scoring. The problem is defense. But I looked at it a little bit closer, and, you know, Mosqueda has a point. If you look at expected goals, according to expected goals, Colorado should have won 3 games that they ultimately got a draw and 2 losses out of. That's the game against, this is shocking, Houston, the game against Sporting, and the game against DC. They had more expected goals than their opponents, which, for those of you who aren't super familiar with expected goals, basically you're looking at what would happen if you took shots in the exact same in those spots? What are the statistical chances that any given spot from any given location is going to go in? If you add all your shots together from a game, statistically, you should be able to predict what percentage of those shots are supposed to go in, or what the raw number of those shots would go in. And the Rapids were supposed to have scored more goals than DC. They were supposed to score more goals than Houston in that game, where Houston beat the Rapids 4-1, and they exceeded Sporting Kansas City on expected goals like 1.26 to 0.82 in the game against Sporting, where both teams wound up with one goal. So it's really interesting that, like, so there are a couple ways of simply saying that. One is that the team could be unlucky, that they could just be a team that has shot the ball and just hit the goalkeeper or the post more often than an average team would be able to do. And the other possibilities are that the team is bad at shooting, bad at finishing, which is maybe possible, or realistically that they don't apply enough defensive pressure to make other teams miss. And so those are the possibilities. But that's the big thing, is that the team would be a little bit better if their finishing was a little bit better, and if they were defending was just a little bit better. The margins of between being a 3-win team and being a winless team aren't that big, and Colorado doesn't. It's hopeful in the sense that a few adjustments and the Rapids might be a more competitive soccer team. Matt, what's your big thing?
So I've got a couple things to respond on. First of all, I have to ask, since the Houston game, there were two own goals. Are own goals, or like clearances that could possibly lead to an own goal, are those incorporated in X goals?
Nope. That's a really good point, which is basically that, like,
effectively, if you take out those two, it was a 2-1 win for Houston. That then makes a little bit more sense to me as far as the number of chances.
Right. That's a good point, but I'm also kind of like, you know, I suppose that you're a good response to that is the question of, were the two own goals the Rapids scored bad flukes? Are they the result of terrible defending? How should they be factored into a metric like that? Should I have thrown that game out completely and just said, oh, that's irrelevant because, you know, expected goals doesn't make any sense here because of the own goals? Or could I say, like, you know, like, dumb luck says this team isn't as bad as they look like on paper? That's my take.
I would say the Rosenberry own goal against Houston was definitely an absolute gap. I think if Axel doesn't put the ball into his own net at that point, then I want to say it was Mauro Minotas, question mark, he taps it in. So
right.
I think, regardless, and maybe this is something that's more anecdotal that would be difficult to build a statistic on, both own goals that Houston got in those games were off of a pass from Albert Elise. They were ultimately a function of them creating danger. And I don't know how you quantify that.
Right.
Without being its own shot on goal statistic to account for the fact that, you know, those own goals to a certain extent were earned. You know, it wasn't like Tim, you know, it wasn't the Sean Johnson own goal, you know, over the weekend where he just gets a back pass towards him and then just completely flubs the pass from 3 yards out from the goal line and it just rolls into the back of his net. You know, it wasn't that. It wasn't Jared Watts's. They were doing things in a good area. If the Rapids don't commit an own goal in those situations, Houston still could have created a chance and potentially a goal on that. The other thing that I'll say as far as expected goals, Mark, that can be a little bit tricky, or maybe, you know, the numbers never lie, but they don't always tell the whole story. That tracks it for all of the chances that you have, and in some cases you'll get chances bundled together. They will add up to a significant amount of expected goals, but then if you count that as the overall statistic, that's not necessarily indicative. So if Kai Kamara heads the ball off a post and then it gets bounced out and then Dylan Serna, you know, wicks in, you know, a rapid volley off of that and then it hits the post and then it comes out and then something, you know, bounces off of Kellen Acosta with a completely open net and just rolls the 1% possibility that it goes out, you know, the Rapids could get like 1.2x goals from that situation when in reality they're not getting 3 goals from that situation. They're getting at most 1 goal from that. So if Kai Kamara puts it in, Serna and Acosta don't get those chances. So that's something to where, especially if you've seen where the Rapids have had some plays where they've had, you know, a rapid 3 or 4 chances over the course of the same sequence, that taking all those chances and bundling it together and say, oh, you know, the Rapids could have had 4 goals in that. If all of those get bundled together in one situation, that's not 4 goals. That's at most 1 from a single sequence. And then to your point about the Mesquita quote, Mark, I'll pull one that I got from Kai Kamara when I asked him about it. He's maybe the one player that I've seen in media availability who I've spoken to, who has stood up and taken responsibility for the current run and saying that he needs to be better. It was very much a tone from Kai that he was absolutely gutted about the loss, but it was a tone of, this isn't my fault because I got a goal and we scored 2 goals and, you know, obviously he wasn't playing center back for the Rapids, but so he wasn't, it's not his responsibility, or it's not his fault, but it's his responsibility. You know, he just basically said, you know, I guess, you know, I got the goal, I was happy for it, but at this point, maybe one's not enough. And he's one guy who's, at least I've seen, who stood up and taken responsibility for that and saying, okay, every chance I get, I need to put into the back of the net because right now our defense isn't doing enough for us to score 3 on the road and get a result. It's not doing enough for us to get 2 at home and ultimately get a result. I need to be better. Every chance that I have that I miss is a missed opportunity for us to get a result. And he's putting that on his shoulders. And I thought it was a veteran savvy move. And it's one that has continually endeared me to Kai Kamara. My big thing that I have, just that we danced around, Mark, is the defense hasn't gotten any better, and I'm not convinced that it's going to. And I think the reason why maybe I'm having this crisis, or fans are so negative, or we're seeing, you know, so many hashtag Hudson's out at this point. There's a Hudson out parody account that followed me over the weekend. Is because we're seeing a lot of the same issues that we saw last year. It's just kind of feeling inevitable that even with all the offensive changes, it's not enough. The midfield is still trying to figure things out, and there's issues as far as shape, as far as tactics, as far as contributions on the offensive and defensive side, individual roles that we saw in the 3-5-2, and then there's individual mistakes and fundamentally just the defensive core that the squad has with Tim Howard in front of them is just not at the level necessary to make the playoffs in MLS. And that core, whether collectively or individually, is capable of single-handedly losing the game in a very, very short amount of time. You know, it was a couple minutes against Orlando where they gave up a couple leads, where they had a lead and then lost it. And then, you know, it was 7 minutes or, you know, what, 7 minutes and 23 seconds or what have you, you know, on Saturday night as well. And we saw this last season, and I'm not convinced that Tommy Smith is going to wake up tomorrow and be 20% a better defender. And, you know, I think Court Ford should be a starter once he's actually able to get healthy with the squad, but I don't know who that other center back is. And regardless of the players or the roles or how things shift in the midfield, I'm just not convinced that anything that happens is going to make that any better. And if it is, it's going to be at the detriment of the offense. So for any, you know, like the situation with things that, you know, pros for Tommy Smith quantified vis-a-vis the negative aspects of having him on the field, I think anything that they do tactically or personnel-wise that tries to protect the team, I think as opposed to losing games 3-2, they're only going to lose them 2-1 or they're going to lose them 1-0 because it's just going to detract from anything that they have going on offensively unless they just want Kai Kamara to be the team. So it feels very, very inevitable. Mark, I know you're not a Thrones fan, but you know there's a quote in the TV show, or excuse me, it's HBO, it's not TV. there's a quote Valar Morghulis, which is all men must die, and it's a motif throughout the show. It's particular to people from one of the cities, Braavos, in there, and then it comes about in a couple different ways. That's really, really symbolic and significant. I mean, at this point, you know, we don't have enough material from George R. R. Martin, like we do about how, like, you can speak the Elvish that Tolkien built for the Lord of the Rings universe, but, you know, it's Rapids Morgulis at this point. Like, the Rapids must lose. It is inevitable that they will lose. A team coming in having a really, really bad run will get off the snide against the Rapids. Anything that the Rapids do that's good will ultimately, you know, turn to ash in their mouths, and it's inevitable that they're going to find a way to lose games, and, you know, they're the Pop Warner opponent, for everybody else to get off the snide or get a much-needed road win, and it's inevitable at this point, and it's every single loss that we've seen on this stretch has just been pretty much the exact same script when things ultimately collapse, so Rapids Morgulis is my, big thing. Let's move on, Mark. The Colorado Rapids are currently 7-34 through their 2019 MLS season. They're sitting 11th in the Western Conference, with 2 points, 2 draws, still 5 losses, and negative eight goal differential. This coming Saturday at, Toyota Stadium in Bridgeview, they will be taking on the Chicago Fire. Early game, 11 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. Oof. The Chicago Fire are currently 8th in the Eastern Conference off of 6 points. They've got 1 win, 2 losses, and 3 draws. They've got a little bit of a different lineup. Bastian Schweinsteiger, who's mostly been a holding midfielder for them as a DP, has been starting at center back just because the Chicago Fire are a dumpster fire at the defensive position. They have Dax McCarty, you know, who's a stalwart, but definitely an aging holding midfielder for them. And then they've got a fun front four for me, Mark. I don't know if they're good, but they're definitely fun to watch. Alexander Katai, who had a fantastic game against the Rapids last year, is back with the team. CJ Sapong got traded over the offseason from Philadelphia Union. He scored a couple goals. They've got Nemanja Nikolic, who's a crafty number 9, you know, definitely a poacher type. And then Nico Gaitan was the other big acquisition. Like the Rapids, a couple of good offensive options, but a lot of weaknesses at the defensive front. Mark, what do you see in the Chicago Fire for this game on Saturday?
I think you hit the high points pretty well. The one player I'll add to that mix is Jordy Mihailovic, who, has been a really fun midfielder for them. And Nico Gaitan, you mentioned, but he's coming over from the, Chinese league, Daling Yifeng, which is one of the teams I think that Yannick Bolli played for or maybe played against. I could be wrong, but, so those are two interesting players that, you know, Mihailovic has a lot of really interesting talents as both kind of a potential box to box, but also with some number 10-ish kind of skills, in terms of passing and also even finishing. It's always interesting to watch Bastian Schweinsteiger playing as a center back. A lot of people are fairly critical of that decision. Others think that in his advanced age, with his lack of mobility, having him be kind of a deep-lying playmaker who's even deeper lying than he would have otherwise been when he first started with the team is an interesting notion. And he could do the job defensively more or less. Those are some interesting kind of advanced points to talk about. One more challenging question is the Chicago Fire are on their second season of trying to figure out what to do at goalkeeper. I think maybe they're doing a little bit better. This year they went with – they cleared the decks last year. I don't think they kept – I think Richard Sanchez was with them last year. But the rest of their goalkeeping core was dumped. This year they picked up David Usted from Vancouver. And he's played every single game for the Fire and he's been good. So that's a thing to watch is whether Usted, who's a good but not great goalkeeper, can continue to stay up at that level. You mentioned that their defense isn't very good and that they've been rotating through a whole bunch of players. I just honestly, other than Schweinsteiger, don't really know the names of these guys back there. They've got a left back who's an American who I'd never heard of before. They have a center back who's from Brazil named Marcelo, who again, I'd never really heard of before. They brought him in this year and he hasn't distinguished himself. So we'll see. I think the biggest challenge for Colorado is that they are 0-3 on the road this year. They show no evidence that, and this is going to be a criticism of Hudson, They show no evidence of shifting tactics over two seasons from home to away. And I think they need to be, and this is going against the Rapids way that Smith and Hudson kind of elucidated, but I think they need to be more pragmatic on the road. And if that means being a more counterattacking team, being a more defensive team, playing in a lower block, all of that, I think, should apply. And it's not so much about the talent on the field for the Chicago Fire or the tactical approach they go into games with. It's more about whether the Colorado Rapids can go on the road and craft a game plan which can be effective in any way, shape, or form. I don't know. Matt, your thoughts?
I think it's, this could potentially be a goal fest just because I don't trust either of these defenses. And I think the front four that you have, you know, whether it's Benny Fellhopper and Diego Rubio, who'll be familiar with the Chicago Fire, and certainly Kai Kamara can have success, you know, basically whoever's not being marked by Bastian Schweinsteiger, is going to be in position to have a field day. The one defender you didn't really mention was Johan Kappelhoff, who had been a center back for them, but who's been mostly at a right back this position just because of all the other issues that they've had. So, you know, I like the front four in these. You know, I like Kai Kamara to get a goal. I like Nemanja Nikolic to get a goal. You know, CJ Sapong has been extremely effective, possibly galvanized by being snubbed, you know, as the most expendable offensive piece for Philadelphia Union. And then he comes to Chicago and he's scoring goals where, you know, Philly had a slow start, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. So I think it'll, in that sense, I think it'll be an interesting game. These are two very clearly not good teams in MLS. And I think a lot of people outside of Chicago, Illinois and Denver, Colorado aren't particularly gonna care about it, but I think we could see some offensive fireworks from these teams. There's gonna be a lot of really interesting 1v1 matchups. I think I'm curious to see with how much Hudson's switched around the midfield right behind Kai and who's been the main central attacker to either assist him or try and pull the springs, what that decision is like, and then how Dax McCarty ends up reacting to it. You know, we could see, you know, this could be, you know, like MLS 2013, you know, like fan fiction almost, like that, with McCarty going up against Benny Fellhaber, that, you know, would have been really, really cool. You know, they, you know, New York Red Bulls and Sporting Kansas City never met in the playoffs with any significance, but that'll be an interesting matchup. And I think one of either CJ Sapong or Nemanja Nikolic are going to be able to have their way regardless of what's happening, at the center back position for the Rapids. Given Chicago's issues, particularly at the fullback position, they've got a center back starting out, you know, out wide, and they've got a, I don't know if he's a homegrown or if they drafted him, but Jeremiah Gudajar, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, he's from Indiana, at fullback. DC United was an absolute mess at fullback last week with all the injuries that they had, and then, you know, they had like three right backs that got hurt over the course of the previous three games that had Areola playing there, and we didn't see Rosenberry and Sam Vines dominate the game in terms of those 1v1 matchups, particularly on the offensive side. And I think if it's those two at fullback for the Chicago Fire, you know, I think Rosenberry should have his way with, you know, the 21-year-old. And then I think that, you know, whether it's, you know, Dylan Serna or Sam Vines, both of them will be faster 1v1 against Johan Kappelhoff. So I think maybe the wing plays are going to be critical, you know, maybe sit deep, for the Rapids, absorb pressure, get the ball out wide into a good position, and then get out on the races. And as soon as you get into the final third, hit something into the box and hope if Kai Kamara can't get to it, that he creates space for somebody else to do it. That said, I'm not sure that I like the Rapids getting a result in this one. The Fire will be on a little bit more rest for this game. They played this past, a week ago Friday, so they'll be on an extra day's rest, and then obviously they'll be the home team, and we know what that means as far as playing in MLS. There's been some interesting news recently that I think we should at least acknowledge, Mark, regarding the Chicago Fire and potentially, an ownership swift, a change in ownership that could coincide with a rebrand, possibly Chicago City Soccer Club, and then also coinciding with a move to Soldier Field and then possible pursuits for a better downtown, you know, soccer specific stadium for them. And we've seen these kind of rumblings with some of the other, you know, first class of MLS squads or first class of MLS teams, you know, and I think the Rapids certainly fit in there. You know, we saw it with the Save the Crew movement last year and then ultimately them looking at getting a downtown stadium, new ownership group, you know, revitalization within the community. And the Fire are kind of in that same ilk of the Rapids that, you know, they're one of the first teams in MLS. They were 97 as opposed to 96. And then they put, you know, a reasonably priced stadium, in the suburbs, and it hasn't really connected with them. And you combine that with really, really poor results in a big market with a lot of other sports options, whether it's the Blackhawks, the two baseball teams, the Bears, who are really good this year. You know, I equate that to, you know, the Broncos, the Rockies being really good. The two teams that play at Pepsi Center making the playoffs. How do you make sense of what's going on with the Fire? From afar, is it a good thing? And, you know, are we starting to see a little bit more of a trend to where there's been a revitalization of some of these older teams? We can throw Sporting Kansas City in there as well, and the Rapids are still kind of falling behind, you know, and I hesitate to use, you know, the term tin pot, but given what we've seen from Allianz Field, Sporting Park, you know, what LAFC's done, and even what the Crew could aspire to be this year, you know, like, we're still playing in Dick's Sporting Goods Park and Commerce City, and there's a bunch of other better options in town, and there's a bunch of other old teams in MLS that are revitalizing themselves and re-upping the ante, you know, where MLS is at the point where the standards for an expansion team are higher than 75% of the existing teams in MLS.
It's a show of its own to talk about the challenges of being an MLS 1.0 versus being an MLS 3.0 team, that LAFC and Atlanta can come into the league and have big, fancy, high-spending ownership groups that are willing to really open big stadiums with big money. I mean, I went last year to LAFC, and I went last year to Sporting Kansas City, speaking of a revitalized MLS 1.0 team. I wrote a robust article about how, Sporting was a model that Colorado could approach. But, you know, I want to pump the brakes on the idea that building a new stadium is really a solution. Not only because, I just don't necessarily believe in throwing money at a problem to solve it, but also because, I often ask the question of where does this money come from and how did these stadiums get built and how appropriate is it in a world where, you know, a lot of Americans go to bed hungry, a lot of schools don't have adequate funding, in Pittsburgh we have bridges that are like really not safe for cars to be driving over, and yet we drive over them every day, but we're going to take a 25-year-old stadium and, or not even 25 years old. I mean, Dick's Sporting Goods Park is 12 years old at this point, and say, you know, and tell the city and the state, we need, public money potentially to build a better stadium to attract more followers, or we're going to leave. And that's the reality of it, is that like most of these professional teams, they want to find a way to get a sweet deal for themselves that comes with public money. So that's my caveat to this. So all of this is a long-winded explanation of why I think I'm excited for the possibility that the Chicago Fire will move out of Bridgeview, which is a distant suburb to Chicago, which isn't easily accessible by the fans, and move potentially to a more central location. But I do kind of question whether – I mean, one challenge that I really have is, like, it's an ongoing, never-ending argument online with Rapids fans of, like, Rapids fans will often say, like, oh, we'd be so much better and we'd have so many more fans if we just built a downtown stadium and then all the hipster millennials would come. Yes, however, you should be able to build a franchise that's not predicated on just being in the most hip, cool location in town. Sporting Kansas City built their stadium on the other side of Kansas City from where most people live, in this suburban, big box store hellscape. And they fill the stadium every week. It's a gorgeous stadium. It's a great stadium experience. It's not about location, location, location necessarily in soccer. You build a winner. That would be a good starter for the Rapids. Build a team that's successful. You know, make some modest improvements. Get the city maybe to extend a more robust subway or robust bus service or subway service out to the Dick. Maybe that would solve some of the problems. You know, there are lots of ways of making the Rapids more relevant, making Chicago more relevant than to just build a fancy stadium and also get the city to pony up for it.
No, I definitely hear you, Mark. I guess the only other thing that I'll add is I like Chicago Fire from a name standpoint. It has a whole lot of history. It, you know, obviously has significance to the supporters. You know, I think a lot of them are okay with going back to Soldier Field if they're able to get 30,000 people there, which is way more than they're getting at Bridgeview. But like, you know, I like the name. I'd be okay with maybe a crest rebrand. I think of maybe the old DC United with the eagle and the wings and then the stars for, you know, the MLS Cups, you know, maybe a little bit of a change, but to ultimately completely throw out, you know, the crest and the team name and the logo and the history that comes with that, I think is a poor start. I guess the one thing that I will add for fans who are, you know, looking at, you know, who watched the game at Allianz Field, for example, looking at potentially what Chicago is going to do as well. You know, the stadium situation that they have in Bridgeview, from an ownership standpoint is complete, like total toxic poison. Just with they're technically leasing the stadium and like they've got a really, really bad situation. They don't control a lot of the other revenue mechanisms. There was a lot that had to happen. And with the Chicago Fire, you know, forego potential revenue streams and other options in order to get that stadium situation to work, where at the very least the Rapids have total control of everything going in and around Dick's, and they're able to make some money when an international friendly comes in, you know, like the U.S. Women's National Team, for example, and, you know, ultimately when they put on the Fish concert in August or September, I can't remember, you know, that's revenue that goes back to KSC that hopefully, you know, is, you know, going in some capacity to the Rapids as well, where other stuff like that, you know, Bridgeview is one of the stadiums that kind of has that stage situation in one of the end zones with only a little bit of seats to actually have like an actual concert venue atmosphere. And a lot of that money that could be going to, the Chicago Fire is going back to the city of Bridgeview. I don't know where the Fire go from getting into Soldier Field. You know, if it's a situation where you go back to MLS 1.0 where there's, you know, still 12 to 15,000 people, then that's a bad look. If maybe with the new ownership group, they spend a little bit more money, maybe more central location. You know, if you're going to play in a big NFL-sized stadium, you should at least be able to get to 30,000 people. And I still have some doubts about whether or not, the Fire can get there. Let's move on, Mark, to Ask HGHL. We've got two questions from this week. I will throw the first one to you. Not really a question, but I think a topic that would spurn off some good conversations and definitely some good stats in MLS history. Austin Munez tweets, if you disregard the failed franchises in MLS, I'm assuming that means the ones that folded, so the Tampa Bay Mutiny and the Miami Fusion. So if you disregard the failed franchises in MLS, are the Rapids the worst franchise in MLS history? Hashtag AskHTHL. Mark, if we disregard the Tampa Bay Mutiny and the Miami Fusion, are the Colorado Rapids the worst club in the history of Major League Soccer?
I mean, you know, there's a bunch of different ways to look at it, and there's one version of that, of the answer in which Austin is correct and the Rapids are the worst team in the league. And there's two versions of that answer where they're not. And the reality is, in none of those situations does it matter. Do the two failed franchises, the Miami Fusion and the Tampa Bay Mutiny, really matter? Because if it's about failure, then it's just about financial collapse. It's not about wins and losses. So here are the three possibilities. One, which MLS original team has the fewest wins of any of the originals? In that case, the answer is, depending on how you count it. So you mentioned the Chicago Fire before, although they had one full season less than the Rapids, but also the San Jose Earthquakes, who are an original. However, they did have, a brief hiatus, when they were contracted, and then eventually that team wound up moving to Houston. Two, which team in MLS history has the fewest points per game? So that lays out all the teams in the league on an equal plane, since everybody, it's not a value. It's on a per game basis as opposed to a historical perspective. Minnesota United are the worst, followed by Chivas USA, Orlando City, Toronto, Philadelphia, Tampa Bay Mutiny, Montreal Impact, and then finally the Colorado Rapids. So by that metric, they're only the eighth worst team in Major League Soccer. Averaging, the Rapids average 1.263 points per game. Finally, if you were going to look at this on which team in MLS is the worst in history based on most losses in team history, the answer to that one is, ding, 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 the Colorado Rapids of America, who have lost 317 games through the end of the 2018 regular season. If you add to that the losses they have this season, I think that bumps them all the way up to 322 games. And the New England Revolution are hot on their tail, but have not surpassed them. So that's his answer. The Rapids are probably the worst team in Major League history, Major League Soccer history, but not by all, not all the judges will have it on the card as the Rapids being the worst.
I don't remember who this quote's from, but it was at the old Three Lions on the little framed quotes that they had. Rest in peace, Three Lions. At the end of the day, Mark, football is all about what's in the trophy cabinet. The Colorado Rapids have one MLS Cup. There's a bunch of MLS teams that do not have an MLS Cup, including three MLS originals, the New England Revolution, the New York Red Bulls, and FC Dallas. Obviously, some of them have other trophies. The New York Red Bulls have a bunch of supporter shields, and the Rapids do not have a bunch of supporter shields. But if nothing else, they have that. I understand and I hear the point that Austin's trying to make in terms of the current state of the club and it just being extremely middling and really getting passed by all of the MLS 2.0 teams that are re-upping, all of the expansion teams that are coming in far better than where the Rapids are, and then even some of the MLS originals who struggled of late finding something else to where they can have success. I think the LA Galaxy have been revitalized to a certain extent by LAFC coming in and having Noisy Neighbors to the north. I think the New York Red Bulls are a very different club after NYCFC has come into existence, and we're seeing a potential rebrand, reshuffling, moving into, aspiring to be one of the clubs that pushes the league in what the Columbus Crew are doing, and then potentially what the Chicago Fire are about to, get the ball rolling on that front. And in a lot of ways, you know, those teams are leaving them in the dust, or they're gaining on the front of the pack, or, even the LAFCs and the Atlantas of the world. And, you know, the Rapids are just kind of lightly jogging behind the rest of the pack, standing there with the New England Revolution. I definitely hear that sentiment and that frustration given what the club is potentially capable of and seeing just what everybody else is doing that the Rapids aren't doing. And, at least from an ownership top down standpoint, have no aspirations to become.
Speaking of your cups comment, which was a great one, and I totally forgot that that's a totally legitimate way of measuring it. There are only six teams in Major League Soccer who have earned no trophies. Who are they?
The New England Revolution?
No, the Revs. What do the Revs have?
Oh, they have a supporter shield when 12 men and everybody was super good. Okay.
Nope.
It's gotta be.
No, they did not win supporter shield ever. They,
Open Cup?
They won USOC 1 year.
Okay. Okay. It's got to be new teams. So, LAFC doesn't have a trophy.
Was that
FC? Since LAFC doesn't have a trophy.
LAFC. Oh, it's seven because FC Cincinnati's not on here. So great.
FC Cincinnati doesn't have a trophy.
LAFC doesn't have a trophy. Keep going. New.
Orlando, NYCFC.
Yep.
If we're not counting Derby trophies because they won Hudson River last year. I don't know if they won Canadian Championship or if that counts, Mark, but Vancouver?
They won the Canadian Championship.
Philadelphia Union?
They have never won anything.
Montreal's been in CCL.
The last
so
one is the saddest because they're never gonna get anything at this point. It's a club that doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, Chivas USA.
Chivas USA, 10 seasons, Zero trophies, which I'm surprised that
the Rapids are better than Chivas USA on so many metrics. I think we can say comfortably. Oh, I guess they're a folded team, so that doesn't apply to Austin's question.
Yeah, but you could. But to Austin's question, he said, you know, like if you don't count Miami and Tampa Bay, Miami and Tampa Bay both won Supporters Shield, so on at least one measure, they were better. That being said, you know, to win the Supporters Shield as the Miami Fusion back when there were only 8 teams in the league is kind of ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. And then the other question that we have is from Purple Rocks, and Purple Rocks asks simply, hashtag AskHGHL, will the Rapids win a match this year? Purple Rocks, I will say yes that the Rapids will win a game this year. As I wrote about for Last Word last week and then a little bit this week as well, I'm having a hard time finding enough wins for the Rapids to get clear of potentially competing for the MLS Wooden Spoon, but the San Jose Earthquakes are a really bad team. I think they could get a result against them. You know, I think there are other advantageous positions for them. I don't think there'll be many wins. I think there'll be a lot of games that you would expect a remotely competent MLS team to get a result in. The Rapids will get, but I mean, you can't lose all 34 games. Like at some point, like, you know, it's going to be 10 minutes into the game and the Rapids are going to be the beneficiary of a PK or a super lucky, red card going against the opponent, or they're going to rotate the squad, or it's going to be decision day and the team that they're playing, you know, is already qualified. So then they put out, you know, effectively a USL two or a USL roster, or a bunch of homegrowns, and the Rapids just absolutely smash them. I think they get a win. I don't think there'll be a lot of wins. And it might be a while before they get one. As we're looking, it's the 80th minute and Vancouver Whitecaps are currently up 1-0, and that does not bode well given the Rapids schedule going into the month of June.
Yeah,
listeners.
I'll just
go ahead.
I'll just add that no team in Major League Soccer history has ever lost all of their games. The worst team in MLS history, who I love to talk about, I would do a documentary on them if anybody would ever watch it or read it, is DC United's 2013 season when they only won 3 games and yet
they won Open Cup.
The Open Cup.
Listeners, you can follow us on Twitter individually at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPollard. Check out our written Rapids musings at the Denver Post and Last Word on Soccer, respectively. Hit up Holding the High Line on the socials, Rapids96podcast@gmail.com and Rapids96podcast on Twitter. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHGHL. As we talked about last week, we are on Patreon. Feel free to check us out there and give us money if you feel that we are deserving of your financial contributions to continue to support us. And then for a special deal on the Denver Post, head on out to denverpost.com/AHTHL, where you can get a really good deal on the digital content, Rapids related and otherwise. One little fact check I want to give you, Mark, before we end up getting quoted on that. David Ostedt spent most of his time in MLS with the Vancouver Whitecaps, but was actually with DC United last year before Bill Hamid came back.
Thanks.
So technically, Ostedt came to the Chicago Fire via DC, but he was for an extended period of time with the Caps up in Vancouver. It wasn't really posted on any of the socials from the club in the post-game media session that we had with Anthony Hudson on the game on Saturday, because the game got moved from altitude because of the Nuggets playoff game, and it wasn't really shared there. So I'm going to share the audio recording that I got from the presser, particularly the sections about Anthony Hudson's comment on the defensive side of the ball, just because I thought they were enlightening and at least very much a slightly different tone from what we've seen from the gaffer in past that could indicate potential changes, or at the very least indicates that he is aware of what some of you and what Mark and I certainly have been lamenting for the better part of the past 12 months. With that, listeners, we'll see you next week, where hopefully we're not talking about a Rapid 6 loss in a row. We'll see you then.
Peace.
Coach, you've tried a couple different things defensively, changing personnel, changing shape, and even changing things in the midfield to help out defensively, and nothing's really worked. Can you speak to maybe what the root cause of some of those problems are, and really how do you try and address them now that this has been such a consistent problem?
We've had a back four since the start of the season, so we haven't changed the shape in terms of the back four. The change in the midfield has been largely down to getting the best out of our midfielders and getting them in the right positions. Defensively, if you look at, I would say, a large part of our goals, especially recently, know, there has been a lot of individual mistakes. You know, we come away from each game and we look and we see, you know, can we put ourselves in a different shape, in a better shape, to make us more compact and defensive and give ourselves more confidence when we don't have the ball. But, you know, if you look at the goals today, you know, the second and third goals, nothing to do with the shape, nothing to do with the defensive shapes. And, you know, it bounces off Kellen, bounces off Kofi, then we don't deal with that one. That's got nothing to do with the shape. Defending the corner, it's got nothing to do with the shape. And if you look in Orlando, the same thing. It was, you know, handballs, penalties, individual defending. So what we have to do and what we are doing, we've made changes tonight because I think changes were needed to have been made. But the reality is, Dylan's, that's not his position, but he's had to play there at the start of the season. We've had injuries to our left backs. We've had injuries to our centre arms. We've had sending off, so he's probably stayed there. And the reality is, you know, that is not his position, but he's done. He has, for the large part, done a very good job for the team. So we come away and, you know, we address it every week and we work and we talk about it and we work on it in training. The reality is we have I've changed the back four again and no one's really telling me or staking a claim that they should be starting and I'm waiting for that to happen and it hasn't happened yet. So that's where we are, and we have to keep looking at it and keep improving it.
Thank you.
Offensively, you guys made a lot of adjustments this offseason, early on in the season, 6 goals in the last 2 games. Are you starting to see at least some progress in that area?
I think
Coach Sam Bynes gets his first significant minutes this season. What was your assessment of his play tonight?
Yeah, he did okay. Decent. It's not easy for a young kid to come in and play when there's such a focus on not conceding goals and a lot of pressure on the team. So I thought he had a decent start. He's obviously a young kid. He's still developing and getting experience. So I think it was a good start for him.
You know, you've been talking about this whole press conference about your defense. How concerned are you about what's going on the defensive side of the ball?
It's not good. It's not good. We're not happy with it. It's we have to find a solution. Now, we conceded the amount of goals we've conceded. It's something that we have to change.
Do you have thoughts about what you might be doing to think about changing?
Well, exactly what I said before. We have to, I'm waiting for the responsibilities on the players to prove to me that they should be starting. And some of the players haven't been performing well enough. As a coaching staff, we will keep analysing the performance and addressing the issue and working on the issues and trying to improve the team defensively. We will continue doing that. We'll keep looking for solutions, which we do. The players have to step up. Defensively have to step up. Like, it hasn't been good enough. It hasn't been good enough. I'll have to be careful how strongly I feel about it because it's not good. It's not good. And I'm not happy with it. And as I say, I'm waiting for players to tell me they should be starting. At the moment,